Member of the fellowship, and we'd like to welcome you if you are new or if you've been coming here for many years. If there's anyone who's never been here before and would like to introduce yourself, please feel free to stand and introduce yourself or introduce yourself to us during the coffee hour, and we welcome your coming here. This is a celebration of International Women's Day, which was last Friday. The opening words that were read by Emma Goldman, one of the very original peace and speaking out women in the turn of the century in the East Coast first and then traveled around. So the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship here in Skagit is a part of a worldwide movement of Unitarian Universalists, and we stand together with all our brothers and sisters here this morning in honor of women and men of all colors and of all persuasions throughout the world. One announcement I have is about the Family Promise. We will be representing us and working with Family Promise the last day, which will be March 31st, and then Saturday, April 1st. That's Sunday and Monday. And so anyway, if you'd like to work with Family Promise, we go and serve dinner, and then some people stay over with the people who are involved in Family Promise shelter that night. And Pat has information about it if you'd like to participate. We would like to have more people from the fellowship come and help serve dinner and help meet the people that are there as participants in Family Promise. Are there any other announcements that need to be given this morning? All right, thank you. Yes.
Those of you who have kept track, we've had second Saturday of every month, and yesterday we had 23 people at the, what's the name of it? Oh, the one when we were out in front of Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood, yeah, there were 23. I noticed that in the paper last night, news. And that's, we've been doing this for a long time, but it was kind of heartwarming to know that it's growing and growing slowly. It's only an hour once a month, but it's well worth it.
Right.
The next Lent is coming, and I think it's going to be up to people on which days they want to come, but one day every week, every weekend, every Saturday, or anyway, we'll find it out and put it out in the news, but that's a new thing for us.
It's 11 to 12 on the Saturday morning. And during Lent, we do have opponents in our line. Technically, we're not supposed to speak to them. I've tried in a friendly way, especially when they carry the sign that says, stop abortion. And I generally say, we all want to stop abortion. If we had to have some contraception, would be helpful. Nobody hears me. I'm sorry. What I was saying was that there's opposition during Lent. There are one or two or three, sometimes people with signs opposed to Planned Parenthood, but particularly specifying abortion. And though we're not supposed to speak with them, I have tried in a friendly way to say something and good morning, and we would all like to stop abortion with proper medical care and contraception, but they don't usually answer. So just if you see them, just kind of smile. And anyway, that's that story.
Thank you.
As the world turns, many of us through the week have things that happen, and now is a time that people can express their joys and sorrows. If you have something that you would like to say briefly, you could take a stone, put it in the water, and express your concern or your joy. I'd like to add a stone for all the women, children, and families around the world who are suffering. Pebble for any of the joys and sorrows that are still in our hearts, but just will remain unspoken today. Now it's time to take our offering, which will be gladly received to the stability and benefit of our fellowship. Who's going to take it?
During the offering, we are proud to present Greg Sherman and Matt Bianconi singing a very special feminist song of Dolly Parton's from 1991. If you could turn your hymnals to number 524, we'll read this silently and have a few moments of reflection. Worldwide, having to do with gender discrimination. And I don't know if you saw this wonderful letter in our local paper from Jolene Saloniker from Cedro Woolley on gender. And this is her last paragraph. No one, not the president, nor the legislature, not the courts, nor any branch of government, not any person or persons of power, has the right to look in someone's pants and decide who they are and what they may do on that basis. Neither do you. Action, reaction. Women in rage, men and women, and the women who depend on those men seek vengeance. The Second Sex, which was the title of this sermon, is actually a controversial book, as you remember, by Simone de Beauvoir. It was published in France in 1949 and banned by the Vatican. She painted a startling portrait of a woman's thwarted freedom at every stage of her life. But it wasn't the first feminist tract. In the 18th century, another woman claimed that women possessed the same souls and mental capacities as males. If they seemed incapable, it was because men encouraged them to be frivolous. I guess that's still true to this day. Mary Daly, if you remember, the Catholic theologian, claimed if God is male, then the male is God. White men have had a nearly exclusive grip on political, economics, and sexual power in the United States forever, despite being only a third of the population. Women were historically banned from property ownership, education and professional opportunity, equal income, personal credit, and control over their reproduction. A lot of women have taken shelter in that protective core, accepted a life of dependence, and supported white male power to protect the benefits they've received there. Where do I fit in? I was one of those who pounded on doors that are opening today for others. And I've always been a feminist, fiercely defending women's rights and never forgetting those who cause us pain. I remember that Joe Biden belittled Anita Hill. I met Anita Hill at a General Assembly. What a thrill. I sat at her feet. I remember that Adolf Kors funded the anti-ERA campaign. I have not touched a Kors product since that time. I grew up in Manhattan. My father was a white patriarch, and my mother was very beautiful and dependent. I went to a girls' sleepaway camp for many summers, to a girls' high school and a women's college. At least four of those women's college, once called Seven Sisters, remained staunchly single-sex, defending the right of women to be front and center, protected as long as possible from male domination. Strong women who emerged from my college include Gloria Steinem, Betty Friedan, Barbara Bush, and Nancy Reagan. In 1959, I was told by a personnel manager that women would never be anything but secretaries at CBS. For a while, I was a production assistant at Goodson Todman, the game show experts, where all the producers and talent were male. I was fired for sewing during my break. It was not appropriate to the time. What can I say? A program coordinator at NBC, I went over my boss's head to the station manager to get permission to do my own series. I wrote and produced 13 programs on the performing arts, including an award winner, while still earning just $100 a week. Then my boss got rid of me. By the time I was associate producer and talent coordinator at ABC, where a guest complained I didn't smile enough, I was over 30, and there was no place in broadcasting for women of that age. At the same time, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, top of her class at law school, couldn't get a job and ended up working for the ACLU. When four students were killed at Kent State, I was asked to take charge of public relations for the university at a $14,000 salary, provided I could get myself to Ohio. I had an offer from the ABC Morning Show at half my last salary. Many of my college classmates are now owning up to their Me Too moments, because the general manager at Channel 5 would give me a job if I slept with him. Ultimately, I became so depressed, I turned my handgun into my minister at All Souls, New York. That was Forrest Church, if you know him, was my minister in New York. And in 1883, I moved to Seattle, where after two futile years of job hunting, I took a job with the federal government and at least secured a pension and health benefits. I'm fiercely proud of the brave American women who brought change. Rachel Carson, Margaret Sanger, Billie Jean King, Rosa Parks, a seamstress, yes, but also an NAACP activist. Shirley Chisholm, the first black woman elected to Congress. I met her too, in Seattle many years ago. But as far as the women's movement is concerned, it starts with Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who held a convention in Seneca Falls, New York in 1868 to write a Declaration of Independence. We visited that sacred shrine in 1993. Rebecca Traister, author of Good and Mad, The Revolutionary Power of Women's Anger, available at the Burlington Library, calls Seneca Falls the first wave. She attributes the second wave to Betty Friedan, whose feminine mystique, published in 1963, encouraged women to work outside the home. Friedan also organized the Women's March for Equality in 1970, when 50,000 feminists, old, young, black, white, gay, and straight, linked arms and marched down Fifth Avenue in rush hour. I was there. I was one of them. The police tried to keep us on the sidewalk, but we just spread out across Fifth Avenue. It was really thrilling. I Am Women hit the charts with the lyrics, I've been there on the floor, no one's gonna keep me down anymore. And the song goes on, there's a long, long way to go until I make my brother understand. Here were wives rebelling, a sexual revolution, a soaring divorce rate. The traditional family was threatened. Activists were burning their bras. There was bound to be a backlash. The moral majority gained prominence in the conservative Reagan years, condemning single women and feminists in particular. Then a really big blow. In 1982, Phyllis Schlafly, backed by dependent housewives and frightened men, engineered the defeat of the 24-word Equal Rights Amendment. I carry this still in my wallet. The 24 words and the 15 states that did not ratify, all from the South. What I remember about the late George H.W. Bush was his peculiar choice of Clarence Thomas for the Supreme Court, which brought us a tortured Anita Hill. And so much rage, the elections in 1992, the so-called Year of the Woman, which has now been surpassed, put 24 women in the House of Representatives, and Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, and Patty Murray, our mom in tennis shoes, in the Senate. It's no accident that the film Thelma and Louise about female empowerment came out at this time. I hope you've all seen it. Rage inspires action. It can make teenagers organize to loosen the grip of the NRA when their school is shut up. And some states did respond with legislation against guns. 2016 was another backlash. Women still insisted on controlling their own bodies. Gays were able to marry. There were trans people invading bathrooms, people of color knocking on the wall, and 8 years of a black president from Africa. If white women were expected to smile, black women were expected to grovel, and Michelle Obama did not fill that bill. Not to mention a strong woman was trying to gain power. And when Hillary was angry, she was a bitch. If she wasn't, she was weak. The reaction to Trump's election was the largest single day demonstration in the history of the country, as millions of women donned their pussy hats and marched. The very next year, after decades of sexual harassment and the casting couch, Harvey Weinstein was finally charged, and now we have Me Too. I don't know why this one case brought it on. And all the boards, employers, and institutions that have been protecting terrible men are suddenly self-righteously dropping them. Will this be the third wave, or will it fade away when everyone calms down? It was oppression Steve Bannon who predicted that the anti-patriarchy movement would undo 10,000 years of recorded history. As anger was growing, along came Kavanaugh, a privileged rapist and drunkard as a youth, pulling a Clarence Thomas, denigrating the women senators who questioned him, demonstrating how little qualified he was for higher office, according to letters that poured in from judges and lawyers. To no avail, the white patriarchy swept him forward. As a reaction, women, aching for Blasey Ford, changed the political landscape in the 2018 elections. From our side, there's a lot of good stuff going on. There's a renewed interest in the Equal Rights Amendment. The embattled CEO of CBS had been replaced by a woman, and he got no golden parachute. Women over 40 are getting good roles in Hollywood. They're able to direct and win awards for it. Six countries now offer equal rights for women. There were none 10 years ago. Another six have female presidents. Another six female prime ministers, one of whom is openly gay. A woman runs the World Bank. There are more than 100 women in the House of Representatives and 21 in the Senate. In my lifetime, there was only one such senator, Margaret Chase, Republican of Maine, from 1949 to 1973, the only one. Emily's List, which supports pro-choice candidates, says more than 40,000 women decided to run for office in the 18 months after the 2016 election. Trans women can now run in the Boston Marathon, where once no women were allowed at all. Microsoft is working to qualify girls in computer science to fill thousands of vacancies. There is also bad stuff. In Washington state alone, 8,000 rape kits remain in limbo. Since 2016, states have passed more than 400 restrictions on abortion. Daycare often costs more than state college tuition. Native American women are disappearing at alarming rates. Maternal mortality is worse in this country than it was 25 years ago. In the past, we swallowed the insults and discrimination. Today, with social media rampant, I believe things are getting out of hand. An accidental touch may destroy a man's livelihood. This is a scary and unstable time. And women are having to remember their painful Me Too moments, which they try to forget. There are conflicts within the women's movement, as there were in the civil rights, socialist, and gay rights movements, as there are in the Democratic Party, which they say is like herding cats, which is true. There are racial, class, generational, and personality differences, and those in power will try to use them to divide and control us. Will American men ever be comfortable when any women are in charge? As Traister says in her book, we are primed to hear the sound of women demanding freedom as the screech of nails on our national blackboard. In The Second City, de Beauvoir said that although political and economic changes might facilitate women's freedom, for true freedom to be realized, men and women must begin to recognize each other as peers who are able to come together in a spirit of fraternité in the original French, without attempting to possess each other, affirming that being a human being is infinitely more important than what distinguishes one from another. And therefore, we will close this service in fraternity, in communion, by sharing a common meal. You have the script. It's just like the one I did a couple of years ago. And you're welcome to come up around. I think I can, do I take this with me? I guess I do. Please come around the table. We're going to read responsibly. We come together to celebrate the life of the Spirit, to pledge ourselves to one another, and to commit ourselves to a life of service and love. We pray that the light of truth may shine upon the paths we walk, and natural grace be spun through the pattern of our lives. Please read responsibly. Oh, I love Tatum. I love your wreath. The bread we share this day is sacred. The friendship we share this day is sacred.
All gatherings when people meet and touch celebrate life.
The laughter and tears we share this day are sacred.
Joy and sorrow surrounded by love give life.
I know that I am worthy. I know that I am welcome.
All are welcome.
For bread, for friends, for joy and sorrow, for the comfort of quietness, let us ever be grateful. Let us hear the words of Jesus. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest.
And come on. And give unto you, that you love one another.
Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy.
Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted.
Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. In the company of those who have gone before, prophets and apostles, disciples and martyrs, men and women, young and old, people of profound faith and profound doubt, we now share this bread and this cup. These are symbols not only of the gifts of life, but also of those gifts of love and commitment Jesus shared with us in his own brief time on earth. We hear that Jesus, the same night he was betrayed, ate with his disciples in an upper chamber. He took bread, gave thanks, and broke it, and shared it. Take this bread in remembrance of Jesus and all who try to follow his teachings. Now, what we're going to do is take this bread and be very careful because the wine keeps spilling. Just pick up the bread, take a piece. No, just a small, well, okay, that's good. We'll just wear it around. Gently on the table. I'm sorry about the shaky wine. I didn't buy the $50 holder for the little cups. Okay. He also took the cup and offered wine to his friends. Drink in remembrance of Jesus and of all who have been near and dear to us. And let us offer ourselves not to be ministered unto, but to minister. There is juice for the children or anybody else. Please help yourselves. Be careful. We have spilled that wine so many times this morning, I can't tell you. As we commune with one another, may our hearts know love, and may we be strong in the face of fear. May we be lifted above what is low and mean, and long for goodness and justice. Let peace possess our souls for eternity. Amen. Amen. Now we will have our closing hymn and our closing chalice and our closing...
We're now going to extinguish the chalice, though you know that the light that is here only transfers to your heart to keep till we're together again. And the words are here in the bulletin by Albert Schweitzer. At times, our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us. And we'll make a circle.